Why are you guys being so divisive? This is a common question that I've seen in the comments from some people, and they see making videos like this. And today we're going to talk about Cardinal Mueller, Archbishop Vigano, Pope Francis, more info on Cardinal Murphy O'Connor, who died last year. We're going to continue some of the strands that we've been working on in the last few weeks. But people are asking, why are you being divisive? This is not being divisive. And some people are saying you're just following rumors. No, these are archbishops, nuncios, cardinals in the Catholic Church, people who are friends of Pope Francis, who have worked with Pope Francis. So this isn't gossip. This isn't hearsay. This is looking into the truth. And we have major allegations against top cardinals and against the Pope himself. And this comes to light even more when we have this new part two from Archbishop Vigano and a recent revelation yesterday from Cardinal Mueller confirming that he was called off on the investigation of the rape accusation of Cardinal Murphy O'Connor. Joining me back is Timothy Gordon, author of Catholic Republic. Welcome back, Timothy.
Thanks a lot.
So a lot of things have happened since we last talked. The first thing was Archbishop Vigano put out part two. And in this, he calls on the papal silence that Pope Francis will say not one word. We did a video on that, and we also talked about why Archbishop Vigano can be trusted as the Archbishop Nuncio from the Vatican to America, which means all communication was going through Archbishop Vigano.
Right.
So, again, I just want to stress that because a lot of people think, oh, Archbishop Vigano, who's he? He's a major player in this whole situation in the last 10 years, especially going back even further with Cardinal McCarrick. And then also what was kind of odd in this part two of Archbishop Vigano is he calls upon Cardinal Ouellette. Now, I'm from Texas. I don't know how to say these fancy French words. I may be butchering it. I would think it would be Ouellette, but other people say Ouellette. So he calls on Cardinal Ouellette, who is the prefect for the Congregation of Bishops going back to 2010, currently there. So all the bishops in the world are appointed by the Pope, currently Pope Francis, but the Congregation for Bishops takes care of that. And so Mark Ouellette is the point guy in assigning bishops. So welcome back, Timothy, and I'd love to get your take on the new part two of Vigano and then this kind of interesting detail of Cardinal Ouellette.
Yeah, thanks. Well, first off, I mean, what Vigano said yesterday is important because, you know, he said it with a wink and a nod. He had to acknowledge that he couldn't acknowledge details and honestly probably wasn't supposed to acknowledge anything at all based on this pontifical secret, right, which is something like an absolute seal that anyone who's in on a pontifical secret, is sworn to strict secrecy forever. But he did confirm, yes, you know, it was Pope Francis that pulled him off of this investigation, and the investigation was of Cardinal McCarrick at this.
Yeah, you're talking about Mueller. You're talking about Mueller.
I mean, sorry. Yeah. This is Mueller yesterday, and this is the most breaking aspect of the story that Vigano's second letter, which broke last Thursday around noon my time, he confirmed that I'm not backing off by a whit, A. B, there's some more details that I can share and I'm willing to share. And C, there are other aspects of this. There are other moving pieces that I'm going to share a little more detail on. And yeah, go ahead.
I just thought it was really interesting. We put out that video on the investigation of Cardinal Murphy O'Connor for raping the 13, 14-year-old girl. And it was the next day, within 48 hours, that this Archbishop Vigano note comes out. And he mentions the Murphy O'Connor in it. So that's just more proof. I almost wish we had done the video the next day, because then we could have added the Vigano part too.
Right.
That's part of the purpose for this video, is just showing that all of these threads are being tied together. And like you said, yesterday, to further confirm it, we have Cardinal Mueller, who was doing the investigation at the CDF, on Murphy O'Connor, who was called off the altar, which is just sacrilegious. It's wrong. And he he'd say, you don't want to break the papal zeger, but he said, yes, I did not, I no longer had papal support to continue the Cardinal Murphy O'Connor molestation rape case. Because
right.
in order for a cardinal to be investigated, since he's one of the Pope's men, you got to have papal support.
Authority.
And papal Pope Francis sanction. Took it away. And that's yep. the question. Timothy, why did Pope Francis want a investigation into molestation stopped on one of his cardinals?
Well, of course, you know, we know that in common parlance, when this, you know, when you don't want something investigated, it doesn't look good. LifeSite made some sort of clarification in the last 3 days that they never said that Murphy O'Connor, Cardinal Murphy O'Connor, was actually guilty, right? That's sure. not been demonstrated apodictically or even legally. But they did reaffirm that, yes, the implications, of course, are not good when he and his friends feared an investigation and even rose to the level of stopping an investigation. There are insinuations that probably this indicates guilt. And yeah, he had the highest friend in the land when it comes to the magisterium, Pope Francis, who we now have it on very, very identifiable, meaning non-conjectural, and solid authority, Cardinal Mueller, who's, you know, used to be the number two in the church in terms of matters of faith and morals, that this was indeed true. And it was a big story. And another aspect of the fact that it came out, I think, the day after the last one of these we did, is that, this is not just speculation. It bulwarks the point that you keep making, right? Some of the naysayers out there don't want any of this stuff talked about. I mean, even among the laity.
No,
I mean, obviously.
There's comments in the videos and on the site saying we should never say anything about a pope.
Right.
If it has anything to do with the pope, we should say nothing. That's what we do as lay people. I don't think that's correct.
Can we talk about that? Just
I think we should
for 1 second.
And you know, I tweeted last night. People were talking about clericalism, and I said the highest form of clericalism is papalatry, worshiping the pope. That is the highest form of clericalism. To say that because a man is pope, we must always agree with him. And if there's anything that's sketchy or wrong, or that we can't say anything about it,
right.
And
right.
trust me, I wrote a whole book defending the papacy. I'm all in on the papacy, you know, universal papacy, papal supremacy, papal infallibility on faith and morals ex cathedra. I'm all in. I'm not a papacy basher. But because I love the papacy, I want to see the papacy venerated, respected, and whoever fills that office to be a worthy and dignified successor of St. Peter. That's it.
Certainly. Since the close of Vatican I, the Catholic defense of the doctrines set forth there on the Pope, you know, papal infallibility in these rare instances, which have arisen only, you know, twice in 2,000 years, has been precisely to rebuff the Protestants and even the Orthodox by saying, no, look, we don't worship the Pope. We don't worship the Pope. The Pope can be wrong when he's not speaking ex cathedra. You know, look, they were even saying in the late 1800s, look at Paul's rebuke of Peter. Look at all these boom, 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 boom. Look at all these examples of past popes, which have been either clarified or fraternally corrected by their brothers in the cardinalate. And so what's happened is Catholics have become accustomed to hearing these defenses and even sort of proofs. No, look at these past popes we've corrected. As long as they're in the past. However, when it's come to a papacy that in real time, in really real time, now that for the first time in the history of the church and the world, we have Twitter, you know, Facebook, all of these social media
YouTube.
Where people, it's like that. All of these things, people jump on and make a YouTube video, look at you and I, and they can do it over the course of an hour and really have their own channel for both news and commentary. Well, in this world, since 2013, people don't seem so sure about that anymore. They're backtracking, and they're actually making the straw man arguments that we rebuffed back at the close of Vatican I, ever since all the way up to Benedict's papacy. In other words, Catholics are now making reference to the bogus Protestant and in some cases Orthodox arguments against a straw man version of papal supremacy, papal infallibility that we always repudiated. So you have to think about this a little bit critically before you jump on the sticks or the comm boxes and start saying you're not allowed to say this or that about the Pope. And there's also a distinction that needs to be made, because some people out there, you know, I think it's safe to say everyone that I'm making reference to is, I think, on the good guy's side, the right side of things. But, you know, some outfits that are very good that I get a lot of news from that are friends, like Church Militant, they had this policy until very recently that they would not say anything about Pope Francis publicly. And, you know, when questioned about this recently, since they changed the policy after the Vigano letter, 11-pager, came out 5 weeks ago, the head of the outfit, Michael Voris, said, well, we never would correct the Pope theologically, but now when it's, you know, it comes to a question of his behavior, the sin is not perfect, and we feel more comfortable correcting his behavior. That's fine as a level of personal comfort or relative discomfiture with the corrections of popes. But just because one is comfortable or uncomfortable with it, it doesn't make it doctrine. In the canon law, it specifically addresses theological correctness. Now, we can't sanction him, but we can correct him. Our bishops can correct him, and really should be. Archbishops and cardinals really should be. They're there as a sort of theological support. So theologically, that isn't necessarily the dictate imposed by the Catholic Church. We're allowed to correct a pope who's clearly erring, not rising to the level of heresy, on theology. And of course, the same goes now. For whatever reason, people have become much more comfortable, much more lucid in their corrections of the pope's errant behavior. But it's both sides of this, I think, we're allowed to do.
And personally, it for me, it brings about a lot of peace. I mean, I spent the first two or so years being an apologist for Pope Francis, you know, and at the end of the day, I always felt uncomfortable. I said, oh, this looks bad. This doesn't sound right. But I say, well, what the Pope really meant, or there's a translation error, or the quote was cut short, or in another address, he said this, which doesn't mean this. And honestly, it got so tiring doing that for years, you know. And as the papacy moved on, and then as we started seeing moral scandals, and when this McCarrick thing broke, I mean, there was a point where I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. It was really at a Amoris Laetitia. I was like, okay, this is just too, I can't do so many gymnastics to make this work anymore. I'm trying my hardest. I just can't put all the square, you know, blocks in the round holes, you know, my fingers hurt. And now it's just getting, it's just doctrinal, and it's moral, and it's sexual scandal, and it's just building up into a giant mess. And what we need is the Pope, who is the vicar of Christ. I don't believe he's an anti-pope. I believe he's a valid pope. He needs to bring the shovel, and he needs to start scooping it and cleaning it up and giving us clarity and strengthening the brethren, which is his primary vocation as the vicar of Christ. So, I mean, that's really why we're doing this. I hate to do an apologetics on why talk about the Pope. But, you know, as you stated, in Galatians, Paul did correct Peter. And we're not Christ ourselves, but even Christ corrected Peter. And we see in the Gospels that Peter wasn't perfect. You know, he made mistakes. Pope goes to confession, just like the rest of us. So, all that being said, I want to jump back into this question of Ouellette. This, when I read Vigano's part two document, he put a lot of stress on Cardinal Mark Ouellette, who's a Canadian, and he's the prefect for the Congregation of Bishops from 2010, appointed by Pope Benedict.
Right.
And this, it seems that Vigano is saying, hey, this is where the stack of dynamite is piled up. this is where everybody needs to look. And he even kind of points his finger out and calls out Ouellette and says, hey, you know, I've respected you. We've worked together. You've got some dirt. Not him personally, but you know where the dirt is. You know what's right. going on. And then just to clarify, his department, the Congregation for Bishops, appoints all bishops throughout the world. So he works closely with the Pope, but he also works closely with the nuncios. That means he worked closely with Vigano. So why right. do you think that one of the keys to this puzzle is the prefect for the Congregation of Bishops, Ouellette?
Well, because for just, you know, fundamental starter purposes, Ouellette had been informed by his predecessor in the bishop's office, who was Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re, that there were sanctions in place. And I'm not certain how Vigano has this information, but Vigano is standing by it. His predecessor gave him affirmative knowledge of these sanctions, and Ouellette had informed Vigano that Benedict XVI had placed these private restrictions on McCarrick, meaning, according to Crux, is now reporting this. So, I mean, those aren't three dots that are difficult to place, right? It's easy to place the line between them because, you know, there's no other way that he would have had this knowledge. You know, I mean, it boils down to whether or not the basic assertions and allegations of Vigano are credible. And, yeah. and credibility is one of those phenomena that have come under close scrutiny these days in the public, inside and outside of the church. And it's like, look, there are motives of credibility.
Yeah.
He's listing specific documents and specific people that have recourse to them. That comes across as highly credible.
Yeah. You know, another thing it shows is that, you know, it's not just Archbishop Vigano and Pope Benedict and Pope Francis who have this secret among three people regarding Cardinal McCarrick. This shows that it is discussed widely within the walls of the Vatican.
Right.
That the prefect right. for the Congregation of Bishops knows about it and is speaking about it with the nuncio in the United States.
Right.
This seems to reveal that it's a papal secret, but that doesn't mean only the Pope knows about it. It seems that this is something that's discussed and known. The other thing that I find troubling about this is since the Congregation for Bishops chooses all bishops, Vigano also reported in part one that it was McCarrick as a kingmaker or bishop maker who got Cardinal Supich, Cardinal Tobin.
Yeah.
And then other bishop appointments that weren't even in the top three placed in key sees in America, and who knows, placed in key sees in other countries as well. So how is it that if Ouellette knows that McCarrick's a bad guy and he's got sanctions on him, how is he, as the prefect for the Congregation of Bishops, allowing for or making concessions to McCarrick's bishop-making machine? Isn't that puzzling?
Well, it's puzzling from one point of view. If you have a cursory understanding of human nature, it's less puzzling. I mean, look, I don't know quite how to say it. The guys on the other end, the Spirit of Vatican II guys, which Ouellette doesn't quite fit with them, but
yeah, the I mean, Spirit just, of Vatican just cursory. Guys, most people say Ouellette's a conservative. They say that, you know, he's a Balthazarian, which I'm not a fan on. And he's, you know, he's definitely into the Nouvelle Théologie. You know, he's not like a classic Thomist or,
no,
you know, he's yeah. not reading Gary Gulagrange at night. Maybe he is, but I mean, that's, right. that's not where he's coming from. So,
yeah,
you know, in the grand scheme of things, he might be on the right side of center, but you know,
right.
classically speaking, he's not.
But in the Pope Francis pontificate, he has been aligned and associated with the guys that are actually far, far left of center. And that's where I was going with this. No, you know, these people are not stupid. Remember in the 80s and 90s, we used to talk about well, I didn't talk about it. I was a kid. But conservatives, when you look back to the reaches of the 80s and the 90s, they said, what do we do with this crisis in the church that erupted in the 60s and 70s? Well, biosolution, the biological solution, Spirit of Vatican II dinosaurs will eventually die off. And then there will be the springtime in the church. And
yeah, well, it was always said, we have the new crop of the JP2 priests, the John Paul II priests, and they're going to become bishops. And then that whole crazy 1960s, 70s, Hans Kuhn gang, they're just going to get old. And all those crazy, feminist nuns who want women's ordination, they're going to all die out. Well, now in, two decades into the third millennium, those guys are going strong because they have duplicated themselves. They've taken over monasteries, convents, seminaries. They've combed out all the ones who were of the new rising conservative, and they've procreated spiritually or unspiritually those who have agreed with the old. It's kind of funny to say old. I mean, it's not old as in 2,000 years old, but old within the last 60, 70 years, the old guard.
Right. Yeah, they have spiritual replicants in place. And this is not a surprising thing. This is why I think if I had been a little older in the 80s and 90s and I heard this, I like to flatter myself with the assumption that I would have seen through the biological solution is what they called it. The bad guys will die. No, I'm not signaling any particular current members of the cardinalate as the bad guys, but the Spirit of Vatican II crowd knows that through the Congregation of Bishops in particular, this is how you make sure that the bad philosophy perdures, meaning it goes on unchanged through the next generation. So I think that's really, I mean, when you understand, okay, this is who, Pope Francis, Archbishop Bergoglio and co are, it only makes sense that they would have to act in and through the Congregation for Bishops and make sure that they've got emplacements that will carry forward the scheme, to borrow a term from the Alta Vendita.
Yes.
Right. Is that what you're asking? I mean, makes too much sense.
It seems to me a conflict that Vigano does show some respect and sees Ouellette as a friend.
Yeah.
But he's also saying that Ouellette's sitting on a lot of, dark documents, dark secrets. And then also just the idea that Ouellette's there over the entire Congregation for Bishops, and then we've got all these rotten, in my opinion, rotten bishops
that have
been floating out from the Congregation for Bishops.
Right.
And so I'm a little confused there on the way that Vigano treats Ouellette. And still, I have no answers for this. It's a new piece in the puzzle since Vigano Part 2. And
well,
I guess we'll just wait and see.
Remember, Aristotle in book 1 of the Nicomachean Ethics says about the author of the forms, Plato. I prefer my friend Plato, but I prefer the truth more. I think this is the Vigano saying this. Look, Ouellette might be a hell of a guy, and he can really, he knows how to have a beer and be a dude, but this is more important. This is Holy Mother Church, for heaven's sakes, and literally. And I prefer the truth to even my friend. I'm not sure that they're close friends, but he does seem to regard Ouellette a little bit differently than the rest of the crowd that Ouellette has taken in the last 5 years to hanging with. Yeah, I mean, it's weird. Ouellette was known as kind of a neocon, a little right of center, one of these Balthazarian JP2 neocon type archbishop cardinals. And who's to say, really?
Yeah, yeah. I started noticing, I was teaching seminarians back in 2010.
Yeah.
And I was all in on the JP2 new springtime. I was, all in on the new crop of JP2 priests, and hanging out with them and having lunch with them and talking with them, having dinner. I'd say, so what are you guys studying? What are you reading right now? What are you doing on Christology? You're reading Thomas Aquinas, y'all do any church fathers? Like, no, we're just reading Karl Rahner.
Right.
Like, what?
What?
2010, you are, and you're like, well, what's your Christology? And they'd list the books and the syllabus and what. And I was scratching my head, like, how is that possible? You know,
right?
Y'all are, and so it was just kind of this. It was an epiphany for me, as a convert to Catholicism, to realize that my excitement and the enthusiasm that I see on blogs and, you know, conferences and events was not necessarily the enthusiasm that was in the training for seminarians.
Well, look, I just want to interject here.
Some of these seminarians were amazing and they were reading the Summa on their own, you know? So I'm not saying that these were all, you know, misguided young men. They were great men there too, but the seminary preparation, and then I remember asking them, so do you guys pray the rosary? Like, well, rosary is optional. I was like, so it's not expected. No, we don't have to pray the rosary. But what about divine office? If we do one office a day, that's good. And I was just thinking, man, if this was a football team, I'd want them practicing like the plays. You know?
Yeah. Why would you want that? No, what do they make them only do nones or something? Or this is the rule. We don't pray the full office. And the rosary, just the Mother of God asks for one a day, but not Fatima. God himself. Yeah, I mean, I guess you can. Yeah, the Fatima devotion is
optional. I don't know. I just bring those up as examples that, you know, about 10 years ago, I was kind of, you know, the scales fell off my eyes and I realized, oh, okay, well, the JP2 crop or the B16 crop and the biological solution of all those, you know, big time Karl Rahner fans dying off. No, they're teaching it. They're making replicants, as you say, in the new generation. So,
and so part of it's generational that makes it's a strong cultural point that I think has a lot of import in the church, and no one talks about it in the church. When you talk to one of these, you know, liberal ex nuns that were teaching me growing up in the 80s, you know, they talk about Rahner the same way that these same liberal ex nuns probably talk about the Doors. No offense to baby boomers and older. It's like, look, some of this stuff is cross generational and timeless, like Zeppelin. You know, let's sit down and we'll talk about Led Zeppelin together. That's cool. I'm not going to talk to you about the Doors. That's forever dated. That's, I mean, you and I haven't talked about the Doors, but I'm assuming the Doors need to stay in this, you know, in the 70s, the early 70s. That stuff is not cross generational. Rahner, that's cool. You young seminarians of the 60s and 70s were into it. It's actually not. It's incredibly destructive.
Right.
But in the generational sense, it's like, whatever, man. But keep that there. We're not interested in this, right? We're, you know, young people are interested in the return to real tradition. We don't have these same impedimentia that you guys had with regard to the tradition, right, and the patrimony of, you know, the beautiful rites of the church. So I think it's funny when you come across a baby boomer or older who spent their life in the church, they really do struggle with understanding why do young people or even people in their 30s, why do they have an interest in, you know, the Tridentine Mass? You know, think about what Francis said about this 3 years back. He said it meant you had psychological disorders. Dig and see that you're rigid or you have a disorder. It's crazy. Yeah. It's like, no, we just like the church. I wasn't a hippie. I'm not like you, baby boomers. Sorry. Yeah. No offense to the baby boomers out there.
But Timothy, we have to realize that there are young people, you know, guys in their 20s, 30s, nuns, who are reading this stuff and think it's the cool thing still.
Yeah.
To use the analogy, they're like, wow, the Doors are really cool. I just rediscovered it. They're like, wow, you know, Rahner, or wow, these things that, you know, DeLubach says are really cool and innovative, or, you know, I mean, to move a little bit right, but still, I think Drinking the Poison is, we just need to get into Balthazar. It's so beautiful, you know, and, you know, Thomas, he was a little rigid, you know, Thomas Aquinas, and, you know, the Thomistic tradition, it gets off path. We need to be straightened out. You know, we need to get into the theodrama of Balthazar and all this stuff. And so I hear that from young seminarians. I'm just like, oh boy, I gotta go pray the rosary because, you know, and even liberation theology is back. You know, I hear it at CUA, Catholic University of America. Lots of people are doing their doctorates now in liberation theology.
At CUA?
Yes. Years ago, that would not be happening, but it's kind of the hot, you know, Latin American way of doing Catholicism. And
that's not good. You're removing me of my solaces, sir. Yeah, that's not good. At CUA.
No.
Well, hey, just point someone to any other band in the world besides The Doors. They're guaranteed to be better, and you'll get into that. Right. Yeah. Anything other than Balthazar or these worse guys than that. Yeah.
Yeah, we need a T-shirt for that, you know.
Yeah,
Belle Taylor right. G with like Jim Morrison on it or something.
That's right.
Let's circle back.
Dubia Brothers.
Yeah, the Dubia Brothers. Let's circle back to Cardinal Murphy O'Connor.
Yep.
A key English cardinal and a friend of Francis and a member of the St. Gallen Mafia. Upper right corner of this video, you'll see a link to the video you and I did, Timothy, of the St. Gallen Mafia, who's in it, what it's all about,
right,
and how they work to perhaps displace Benedict XVI and bring in Pope Francis. So Murphy O'Connor kind of back in everybody's mind because yesterday, as you mentioned at the beginning of this video, Cardinal Mueller said, I don't want to break papal secret, but yes.
Yes.
I was celebrating Mass. The Pope's secretary walks up to me on the altar and says, the Pope wants to talk to you. Did you tell him I'm saying Mass, celebrating Mass? Yes, he doesn't mind. That's the quote.
Right? He's cool.
Yeah, he's fine with that.
Yeah.
What Cardinal Mueller really means is, I'm in the middle of the holy sacrifice of our Lord Jesus Christ, Lamb of God. Can't just walk off the altar and talk to the vicar of Christ. But Pope Francis is fine with that. So Mueller goes to the sacristy. There's the Pope in the sacristy. And originally we didn't know what was said. But now we learn that this was Francis urgently asking Mueller, hey, no more investigation on Murphy O'Connor. No more. So what were your thoughts when you saw that? It was at the Napa Institute gathering or somewhere in Napa when someone directly asked Mueller, hey, what's the deal?
Right. My thoughts were check the box. This is what I thought. And he also confirmed that this had something essential to do with his eventual removal from the CDF. I remember a story that also broke during the second synod of 2015, about four members of the CDF that Cardinal Mueller had directly under his employ or whatnot, and he was complaining that they had been removed by Pope Francis because he said, this is not a question of competence. These are four of my best people. This is a question of, he used a curious term. I'm forgetting exactly what it was, but he was insinuating there's some sort of personal vendetta for the very competence that he was lauding.
Yes.
And now I think this all, it's a bit of speculation, but it all sheds light on these curious half stories that were breaking on places like LifeSight and 1 Peter 5 back in 2014, 2015. That's what I think.
Yeah. What's interesting too is Mueller said he couldn't get lodging, housing for his staff at the CDF, because if you go to the CDF, you know, it's just next to St. Peter's. It's a multi-story building. And the top floors, I've been in there several times, are rooms, bedrooms. And you can even see, like, people's laundry, like, out to dry on the roof. You know, if you go up on the roof, great view of looking into St. Peter's Square. So it's residential as well. It's not just housing offices. So the people who work there live there. And so Cardinal Mueller also is trying to find lodging for his staff, because people don't just work in the Congregation of Doctrine and Faith, the CDF. They also live there. You can see their laundry airing out on the roof. And so he couldn't get lodging for his staff who's working there. Meanwhile, there's this, you know, evil Monsignor Luigi Capozzi, who's having cocaine-fueled orgies, gay orgies, in the CDF. The police actually come and bust it up. And this was a favor that Pope Francis, you know, granted and gave lodging for this creep. So
right.
there's some bad things going on there at the CDF, and it's sad that Mueller and some of his key staff were dismissed. Meanwhile, you know, some of these people are still in high places, and the Pope says nothing.
He granted the favor for, if there was an intermediary, he granted it for Coco Palmarino, right?
Yes,
and then
exactly.
Coco Palmarino's undersecretary was Capozzi, I think. Is that how it
Yeah, they're related.
Shakes
there.
Out.
Yeah. So well, there it is. You know, everybody, thanks for watching. If you enjoy these, please like. Please hit the subscribe button. We'll be doing more videos on news as it comes out, especially regarding Vigano, Pope Benedict, Pope Francis, and a bunch of other stuff, theology and different topics as well. Not everything's on the recent news in the church. So Timothy, thanks so much for joining us and sharing your insights. And sure. God bless.
Thank you. Thanks.